from KMXT in Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Jay Barrett. Coming up this week, one federal board wants another to crack down on salmon bycatch. Herring attention moves westward, and Bristol Bay is being held up as a shining example for sustainable salmon fisheries. All that and forging fuel from fish, forthcoming on the Alaska Fisheries Report.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families, on the web at amsea.org, and by
the Pebble Partnership, pursuing jobs and opportunities for Southwest Alaska. Find out more at pebblepartnership.com.
The Federal Subsistence Board voted Monday in favor of a hard cap on salmon bycatch by Bering Sea and Gulf of Alaska trawlers. A National Marine Fisheries Service report states that bycatch includes fish from an enormous geographic area, fish that originate in Asia, British Columbia, lower 48 states, and Alaska. Tim Smith of Nome says that indiscriminate fishing has wiped out a weak run in one Seward Peninsula River.
44 king salmon came back to the Bowden River this year. That's a weird count. That's a good count. 44 fish. The Fish and Game has said in the past that it takes 200 pairs of king salmon to make a distinct stock. Well, in the last 6 years on the Bowden River, we've only reached that number, 400 fish, one time in 6 years. And our fish are mostly six-year-old fish, so through the entire life cycle of the king salmon, we've only reached what constitutes a distinct stock one time. And biologically, I think it's you'd have to conclude that that stock is extinct.
Federal Subsistence Board Chairman Tim Tawarik says the board members voted in support of the lowest bycatch limits proposed by the North Pacific Fishery Management Council. One dealt with chum salmon in the Bering Sea.
The board is voted to recommend to the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council that there be a 25,000 trigger number of fish that would top limit of 50,000 chum as bycatch. In other words, when they catch 25,000 chum as bycatch, then they know that they're getting close to the cap of 50,000, and they need to decide what to do.
Warwick says board members also voted for a cap on king salmon bycatch in the Gulf of Alaska.
In the Gulf of Alaska, there was a discussion on setting the limit to 15,000 Chinook salmon, and that's what the board elected to do. There's nothing to trigger any further action.
The Federal Subsistence Board will forward its recommendations on bycatch to the North Pacific Fishery Management Council, which has the topic on its agenda for a June meeting in Nome. Two more buyers entered the Kodiak herring market this season to boost participation, though low prices have kept many herring fishermen out of the water. One fisherman reports that a processor is paying $175 a ton compared to $425 last year. At its peak, there were four processors buying herring. Now Trident and Ocean Beauty, both of which entered the game late, are the two remaining buyers. Fish and Game Assistant Area Management Biologist Jeff Spallinger says about half of the allowed catch has been taken so far.
For the entire Kodiak area, the GHL is 6,135 tons, and so far about 2,900 tons have been harvested.
At its peak, about a dozen seiners were active in the Kodiak fishery, but both Western Alaska Fisheries and Alaska Pacific Seafoods have stopped buying, and some vessels are transiting to other areas of the state. Now there are about 8 seiners left, and Spallinger says the season is coming to a close.
Yeah, they're winding down. A few of the fishermen are actually going to be leaving to Togiak soon, if they haven't already left. So I think there's still going to be boats fishing around. The fishery could go on for, a few more weeks. There's still interest down in Alitak. That area always happens a little bit later. The processor down there has just started to buy fish, so they'll still want some fish from there. So it'll continue for a few more weeks, I think.
Representatives from Ocean Beauty and Trident didn't return phone calls to this story, but Spallinger characterized the quality of herring as inconsistent and marginal overall.
It's been up and down. It's been good in places and not as good as we would like to see in others.
The herring is harvested for its roe, which is exported to Japan as a delicacy. There have been fears that this spring's earthquake and tsunami would harm markets, and the current low prices suggest this could be one after effect of the devastation. Last year's ex-vessel value in Kodiak topped $2.2 million, but will almost certainly be much less this season. Togiak Bay is ice-free, and seabirds and sea lions have shown up. All that's left is for the herring to arrive. Fish and Game Management biologist Tim Sand says once he can confirm a biomass of at least 35,000 tons, he'll open up the Togiak Sacro herring fishery. Fish and Game started receiving water temperature readings of 1.5 to 2 degrees Celsius on Monday. Sand says herring normally move into the district when the water temperature rises to 3 degrees. He said he's seen one seiner, 9 tenders, and a couple of processing vessels on the fishing grounds. At last report, 5 companies have registered with Fish and Game to buy herring, and Sands expects a 6th company to register prior to the start of the fishery. We'll have more next week. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game has announced the final results of the 2011 Sitka Sound Sacro herring fishery. 7 processors and 48 permit holders participated in the fishery, harvesting 19,429 tons of herring during 5 openings, totaling 11 hours. The catch was slightly below the guideline harvest level of 19,490 tons. The overall roe recovery was 13.3%. The total cumulative shoreline documented with herring spawn this season was 78.3 nautical miles, including 53 in Sitka Sound, 11.5 in Salisbury Sound, and 13.7 in the Goodard-Windy Pass area. That compares to a total spawn of 87.7 nautical miles in 2010 and the recent 5-year average of 63.2 nautical miles of shoreline.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
You're listening to the Alaska Fisheries Report. Hear the whole show online at kmxt.org. A highly regarded fisheries biologist and researcher says the sustainable and valuable run of sockeye salmon into Bristol Bay each summer should be held up as a model for how to protect salmon runs across the globe. KDLG's Mike Mason has the story.
One of the men who participated in the symposium was Daniel Schindler with the University of Washington's School of Aquatic and Fishery Sciences. During a presentation on April 13th, he outlined research that he and others did on the importance of protecting habitat and keeping the distinct populations of sockeye that returned to Bristol Bay intact.
When we talk about habitat, when we think about fish habitat, the tendency is always to go to our favorite stream and look at it at this scale. Individual stream, maybe an individual piece of the stream. We think about our restoration efforts. We think about our habitat conservation efforts. We have this long history of focusing in on these identifiable pieces of habitat. And I think what we have gained knowledge of when we think about how the history of the Bristol Bay fisheries have developed and played out is that it's the network of pieces of habitat that like this that really matter. So it's the network of habitat that matters, probably more importantly than any individual piece on its own.
Daniel Schindler characterized Bristol Bay as a fairly small region that, due to a number of circumstances, produces exceptionally high numbers of fish.
And part of that reason is because it's a very diverse, very productive aquatic landscape. You can see all these big lakes here. This is why there's so many sockeye in this region. Sockeye generally rely on lakes for their juvenile rearing. What carved out these habitats, of course, were glaciers. They left this area, for the most part, about 12,000 years ago. And the habitat that salmon are using is basically the remnants of what this glacial destruction was. Okay, it's full of till, it's ground up gravel. That material allows a lot of water to propagate through it, which is the reason why sockeye salmon and other salmon are so successful in this region.
At the heart of Schindler's presentation and his research into Bristol Bay salmon is that different habitats produce different populations of salmon within the same species. He and his fellow researchers published an article in June of last year in the journal Nature that outlines the importance of population diversity in Bristol Bay. Schindler says this can be summed up by thinking of Bristol Bay as a kind of investment portfolio. During his presentation, Schindler used some computer modeling to compare the existing way the ecosystem and the fishery works to a scenario where the habitat and population diversity was removed. He says removing the diversity makes the fishery much more variable from year to year.
Given the variability in the system, we'll let it play out through time. And you see it goes up and down. And in 100 years, only four of those years failed to make the escapement goal. So in years where there's not enough fish to satisfy the escapement goal, there's no fishing allowed. Okay? And what you see is that in 96% of the years, there's at least as many fish returning to allow a fishery. Okay? Now let's take the same system, has the same escapement goal, has the same long-term productivity of 32 million fish, but now we dial up the variability to the level that we see in our eroded portfolio when we pull out all the variability, all the diversity in the system. And this is what it looks like. The long-term average is still the same. It's still producing 32 million fish per year on average, but the variability has roughly doubled now. Now look at how many times you fail to meet the escapement goal on a year-to-year basis. And what you end up doing is closing the fisheries in 40% of your years. And particularly bad if this is your way of making a living, is you get these runs of 3, 4, or 5 years in a row where there's no fishing allowed at all. Fishing communities may be able to withstand 1 year of no fishing. It's really unlikely they're going to be able to withstand 3 or 4 in a row of no fishing.
The point of the computer model was to show that variability in annual Bristol Bay salmon returns is 2.2 times lower than it would be if the system consisted of a single population. In Dillingham, I'm Mike Mason.
Could we someday be warming our homes and gassing up our alternative fuel cars with fish guts? Maybe. University of Alaska Assistant Professor Andy Soria has developed a method to combine fish waste with sawdust to create fuel pellets. They're then put in a gasifier to produce the equivalent of natural gas. The ideal ratio was 20% slurry to 80% sawdust. Soria says 100,000 metric tons of salmon waste is dumped into Alaska waters each year, so much so that it can't all biodegrade or be consumed by other wild fish. He says in some places there are underwater mountains of fish guts. He says the pellets smell like fresh, not rotten fish, and if a processing plant invested in the right equipment, it could offset its diesel energy consumption by using the pellets. Soria works at the Renewable-Based Hydrocarbons Lab at the Palmer Center for Sustainable Living. A Spanish court has sentenced two Somali pirates to 439 years in jail each for their role in the hijacking of a tuna fishing boat. The two men have been detained in a Madrid jail since they were caught after the attack in late 2009. The fishing vessel and its 36 crew members were held off Somalia for 47 days. The Somalis are found guilty of 36 counts of illegal detention and robbery with violence, but absolved of charges of terrorism, membership in an organized crime group, and torture. Under Spanish law, they will serve only a maximum of 30 years in jail, though, regardless of the sentence. They were also ordered to pay 100,000 euros to each person detained. During the trial, the suspects said they were fishermen too and themselves seized by the pirates who later hijacked the tuna boat. Piracy is a highly lucrative trade in Somalia where gangs can often demand millions of dollars in ransoms.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960 or online at alaskaboat.com.
And that's all for this edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help this week from KNBA's Jocelyn Estes in Anchorage, KMXT's Jacob Resnick in Kodiak, KFSK's Matt Lichtenstein in Petersburg, and KDLG's Mike Mason in Dillingham. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Jay Barrett.